Well, how did you first become involved with Bear McCreary and Battlestar Galactica?
I've known Bear. I'll tell you a little bit of history about how I first met Bear. I was doing a thing. It was at USC. He was a student at USC, a music student. I was accompanying the final exams for this. I guess like it was like a songwriting class, showcase class kind of thing, that a friend of mine was sort of heading up. He became a friend of mine. A bass player buddy of mine had hooked me up with this thing, and he said, "Hey, you want to go play this class?" I went, "Yeah, it'd be fun. It'd be kind of cool. I wasn't working. It was, you know, those kind of things. You don't make a lot of money, but it's like you go do it. Maybe you'll meet some new people, have fun, you know, play some cool music, whatever. You never know." Mm-hmm. So we went and did this thing, and Bear was one of the students in that class, and it was his last year at SC as an undergrad, and he had taken this guy's class, and he comes out, and he's got this... he was really just, you know, you could just feel his energy right from the get go. He's like, you know, this young kid, and he's got, you know, he's just got like super high energy, and it's like I immediately identify with this because I think I'm a pretty high energy person. The older I get, the less so, but I'm pretty high energy. But anyway, and everybody as they'd come out would hand us the band or charts, and then we'd have to just kind of talk the form down, and we basically just sight reading this thing and playing it for their final exam kind of thing. But it was loose, you know, it wasn't like a real formal deal. Mm-hmm. And so he walks out, hands us this chart, totally organized. I mean, it's like totally, you just look at it and go like, man, this stuff makes perfect sense, you know. And he walks out and he's got an accordion. I'm going like, oh my God, this is going to be a trip, man. I didn't know what to make of this. And we start this tune, and my buddy, the bass player, and I, our jaws were on the floor. And I knew immediately, at least in my mind, that this guy had some serious talent. So that was my first meeting of Bear. And then the next year, well, all through that time, and even up till now, I accompany, and although it's become less and less because of budgetary reasons, but they have musicians come in and accompany these sessions and play on these sessions for the USC film scoring class. And I've had the opportunity to do that for, oh man, it's been, God, I think like 15 years now. Well, let's see, I know I was doing it in 95. Probably since 93, so yeah, it's been about 15 years or so that I've been doing this. And anyway, so he was a student. I didn't realize at the time he was going to be, you know, because we didn't really talk much when I first met him, but he's going to do the film scoring class as well the next year.
Right.
And he did. And so then, you know, he'd come in every time that we did a session with, and they have different formats, like one teacher will have him write this style and with this instrumentation, and another teacher has him do something different. So every time he came in, like everything he wrote was just really, really together. He was on it musically and professionally. I mean, just right from the get-go, he just had a thing about his whole being and his approach to music making and writing music. So then that's where I first met him. And then, you know, there was some, and then he graduated, and because that's just a year-long course, and, you know, all these guys go through there. And I sort of, one of the cool things about that is you get to maintain these relationships with these people, because they'll remember you, and
right.
If they think they're working on something, they go like, oh, I got this project, it'd be great to get, you know, this woodwind player that I used on this session, or this percussionist, or whoever. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to maintain these relationships with these guys, which has been really cool. And so at one point, a buddy of mine saying like, he was actually an assistant for Richard Gibb as a film composer. And then he stopped doing the job and gave the gig to Bear.
Right.
And introduced Richard to Bear, and Bear took the assistant job. And then one thing led to the other, maybe you already know this part of the story, and then Richard was working on the pilot for Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't, I guess, wasn't really interested in doing the whole thing, or he didn't want to do a TV show, or I don't know, some composers, once they get to a certain point, at least my understanding is, they just go like, you know, sorry, I don't do TV anymore. You know, I only want to do features or whatever.
Right.
And some don't care. They just do the crossover. If they're hired for a job, they'll do it. And so everybody's got a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Richard, for some reason, didn't want to do Battlestar, and he offered it to Bear. And, of course, Bear took it. And here we are. I mean, you know, 5 years later, I mean, Bear's like, he's cranking, man. And he's really honed a sound, I think, and his style. And to me, I mean, I've said this to other people, time will tell, but I think Bear is in the running to be, like, you know, up there with, like, John Williams, ultimately, and Jerry Goldsmith, maybe even more Jerry Goldsmith. But a majorly long career. I mean, Jerry lived till into the 70s, and he was still writing, you know, whatever. I think John Williams is in his late 70s. He might even be 80 now. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And there's a few other composers on the scene right now, too, that have a lot of stuff happening and are extremely talented. So we'll see about them, too. But I think Bear is on that list, for sure.
For sure.
I just think he's incredibly talented, and he's extremely versatile, because he comes from a band. I mean, he was a rock guy. I mean, he knows rock music, you know. Mm-hmm. He plays accordion, so how is that? And he's done bands.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people that are film composers don't know that world. They don't know the current thing of what's happening. They might be kind of interested in it, but they didn't come up through that. You know what I mean? Bear's lived it. I mean, he's played in bands. He still does play in bands. He and his brother Brenton play with Oingo Boingo when they do gigs.
Right.
I think it's a really exciting time, certainly in his career, because he's still young. He's just turning 30.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, I mean, but also musically, and also in the film music, TV music world, because he's been able to sculpt a sound, and he's been able to do create something that I think, on one hand, a lot of people would have never even bothered to, because to do what he does definitely cost him some bread. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has the vision to see beyond, like, the immediate, like, paycheck, I should say, and think beyond that and go, like, okay, well, what am I ultimately going for sound-wise? What am I ultimately going for in the big picture?
Right.
And I think it's paying off for him because, you know, Battlestar is an amazing score to me, and I think pretty much anybody that hears it agrees would say the same thing. It's freaking amazing, and there's nothing that sounds like it. And I think it's because of that, because he's taken that approach and not worried about the expense. I mean, not granted, there's limits, and you have to watch your budgets and stuff. But he's been willing to take it a little bit farther than a lot of guys would have. But I think it's paid off for him, because I think this is what's going to give him, put him on the map. I mean, it already led to, he's got Caprica now, so there's yet another show. He's got Eureka because of that. He got, you know, I mean, so I think it's paying off for him. And it's too bad that, unfortunately, in the ideal world, we all can't have that same kind of, you know, live that same way and have that same vision, because I think ultimately, creatively, ultimately, the big payoff at the end of the road is, or as you're, I should say, in the process of going down the road, is one thing leads to the next, because you didn't make any sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in maybe some, but not a lot. But I mean, Battlestar is not gone away for now, because, you know, now that it's got such a cult following, it'll just be aired all the time. It'll go into syndication.
So now, when you're given a cue to work on, what do you do to prepare for the different aspects of the cue? I know at one point you were naming your drums and that sort of.
Oh yeah. That was just so we would remember what drum I used. But it's kind of cute, you know, like the drums have names, so it's kind of like, oh, like here's Jill, here's, you know, whatever. Who knows how we came up with those names? I mean, it just kind of evolved, you know. But what we did for Battlestar, and that sort of is an evolutionary type thing, we kind of created as we went, because he knew he wanted Tycho's. He knew he wanted, you know, a certain sound, but he wasn't sure about everything. So it kind of, you know, I don't think we used tabla, for example, early on. And it was a little bit later, like a couple, maybe even in the second season, where we used tabla. But it became like, oh yeah, this is the perfect, this is what I was talking about before, where it's like, it became like the perfect sound to use. And who cared whether it's a North Indian instrument or not? And who cared whether the taikos are Japanese instruments or not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that point, it becomes cross-cultural. You know, I mean, it's not about what the instrument is or where it's from or, you know, whatever. it's just a sound that he's going for, which created, obviously, you've heard the score.
Yes.
Created, you know, what it is, and it's like, whoa, there's no denying that there's a lot of power there, you know what I mean? However you had to get it, you get it. So what we did with Battlestar was, I mean, it was more evolutionary in terms of, like, creating the thing as we went. And then for when he got Sarah Connor Chronicles, that was more of like, he knew he wanted to go metal in that. He had a sound that he was going for because of the original Terminator score. So he was going for a particular sound. So one of his assistants and I went out to junkyards and tried to find a bunch of different stuff and car parts to bang on and just like anything that could be thuddy but had some resonance to it. And it was amazing how hard it was to find stuff because everything about cars is made from anything that would be usable and movable is made from plastic anymore. So
right.
There wasn't much to pick from. I mean, like if we could have found like an old gas tank, for example, but had it been pre whatever year, you might find something that was metal and had some resonance to it. But everything now is plastic. It's amazing. So we did find some stuff, and that's what we ended up using. So we did like a prep session and then played all these sounds and, you know, he kind of picked what he liked and what he didn't like, and it's like, yeah, that's usable, that's not, you know. So we'll do like a prep session and sort of an audition, kind of let's get the sound palette together. And we did the same thing for Eureka, we did the same thing for Dark Void, and we did the same thing for Caprica. So, you know, although he knew that Dark Void was going to have similar instruments to, I guess, sort of to Battlestar, but it has still had its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Caprica is like real different. Caprica's got similar instruments again to Battlestar, but not a lot of this, not hugely the same. It's different. It's got some different. It's got more shakers and it's a whole different kind of thing going on.
Right.
In Caprica. So so there's this prep session, and then we kind of get the palette. And then we remember, you know, once we remember, and I've made notes, and the engineers have made notes, and everybody, we remember what we're doing, then that's kind of the prep, so that when we go into the sessions, it's like, oh, okay, here's a cue. And the way that we do it, because it's more efficient time-wise, is to just do like when I, for example, in Battlestar, when I know that, you know, we're doing Tychos and we're doing Rims, well, that's one setup. So we'll mic that, and then I do all the cues. I play all the Tycho parts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come back and I do all the rims. And then once I'm done with Tycho's, I break that setup down and I set, because we're recording all that stuff here at my home, my personal studio.
Right.
As well as some of the other guys come here too. The woodwind player comes here, Paul Cartwright comes here, and for Sarah Connor, some of the string section comes here. The other people have been here, but that's like pretty much the gist of who works here at my room. So then we go cue to cue like that. And knock out all the instruments, and then go to the next set of instruments, knock all those out, next set of instruments, do all the cues, knock those out, like mm-hmm. that. And it just becomes more efficient, because otherwise you're constantly moving mic setups. If you wanted to do a cue at a time, it would take way too much time.
Right.
And, you know, that's one way to be able to use live percussion in a situation like this, and have it be somewhat cost effective, because we're not, you know, because there is a limited budget. It's not like a huge movie score, and even that anymore. They limit the budgets, get tight too. But movie scores have traditionally and historically have bigger budgets than TV for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to create this massive sound with all these layers and layers of percussion, and do it efficiently. And at the same time, you know, still be able to do it live. And there are samples used as well, but which happen to be me. But so it's layers and layers and layers of percussion. But and like I said before, Bear's a great programmer. I mean, I don't know how he has time personally to do everything he does musically,
right?
Because there's a lot going on,
mm-hmm.
but he's amazing and he does it. And then still come in and layer all this on top of it. And that's, again, why the score sounds as cool as it does, because it's intense, man. I mean, there's 100-some-odd tracks of stuff that
right.
need to be mixed at the end of the day, you know. So it's crazy. So that would be, I guess, I don't know if that answers the question, but that's kind of like the prep that and what goes into doing the way we approach working on the score. and how I prepare, because the prep's done sort of in advance, and we kind of know once we get into the show. I mean, for example, there may be something introduced later that hadn't been used. Like just this past season on Battlestar, we used Suzumi, which is this kind of squeezed talking drum type thing, this Japanese drum, which we'd never used before.
Right.
So that was a new sound that got introduced. But other than that, I mean, it's, you know, on occasion that'll happen. But generally, we know once we've gotten into the show, we've created the sound palette, or he's created, and we've helped him develop it. And again, you know, that's the other cool thing about, as a percussionist, you know, one of the things I'm using mostly on Sarah Connor Chronicles is an oil drum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm banging an oil drum in all different kinds of ways, and it sounds, depending on the mallet and where you hit it and how you hit it, it has a huge variety of sounds, and we're doing layers of that. We're doing it mixed with other stuff, you know. So you're getting to not only play some wacky instruments, you're getting to sort of be in the creative process of it too, and say like, oh well, what about this sound? You know, because in the percussion world, there's so many. I mean, it's ridiculous, man. I mean, how many instruments there are? It's nuts. You can't. I mean, being a percussionist is not for the faint-hearted, man, because it's expensive. I mean, you know, you can get to a point where you go like, okay, as a drummer, say, for example, of course, I know drummers who have, like, you know, I know a buddy of mine who's got, he plays drum set, and that's his axe, but he's got 25 drum sets, you know what I mean? Jeez. So that's crazy. Yeah. But, you know, but as a percussionist, it gets crazy because, you know, like, I play drum sets, so I've got 6 drum sets. I've got, you know, 7 timpani. I've got all the mallet instruments. I've got a bunch of African instruments. I've got stuff from all over the world. And the list goes on and on and on. And it's like I could go online today and buy something new. You know, I mean, there's like, it's never ending. What, like, oh, well, I don't have one of those. You know, like, I got to get that. Would be a great sound for, you know what I mean, even if you use it one time.
Right, right.
You know, so, I mean, that, like I said, can be exciting, and it's also expensive. So, and then you got to have a place to store all this stuff, which I've got a fair amount of room at my studio, but I also have I keep my stuff out of cartage, all the majority of it in trunks at a cartage company. So, you know, if I need stuff, they bring it, or I'll go get it, or whatever.
Well, Battlestar Galactica is coming to an end. Do you have any favorite moments or fond memories that you have for recording with Bear, or recording the score for Battlestar Galactica?
I say the early days when we first creating this stuff, you know, my studio at the time was in the garage. So it would be Bear, myself, and Steve Kaplan, his engineer. And we would just be in there going crazy. So there was plenty of times, I mean, we just had some really funny moments. And one time we were doing something, and of course, my language, not that I'm proud of it, is not... it's not the best from time to time. And so, like, you know, like, and I'll, like, I'll play something, you know, whatever, and I'll make a mistake. So, you know, in recording, you know, they're just running the computer, so, like, they get everything. Stop when they need to, but you're playing along, and you mess up, and I might go, like, oh, fuck it, oh, shit, you know, like, whatever. So, at one point, we were doing this one episode, and Bear goes, I got this great piece, man, you're going to love this piece, you're going to play on this. So check this out. So they start playing this piece of music, and I'm hearing this groove, and I was getting ready to play tabla. And all of a sudden, I start hearing myself. And what they did was they took all these snippets of me saying fucking shit, and goddamn, whatever, like a whole piece of this. And they created a whole montage, music montage, of me cursing. And I totally, sorry, I'm fighting a cough here. I totally lost it. It was, like, so hilarious. Now, see, there's what I'm talking about. Like, there's a perfect example. I mean, you got to, come on, man. I mean, if somebody didn't, like, if you didn't have a little bit of what's the word I'm looking for? Endearment in somebody's heart. They wouldn't have gone to the trouble to do that. I mean, that was. I mean, it meant a lot to me. But I was cracked. It was hilarious too. And the other thing was, this was like not an easy thing. This had to take some time to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I'm saying. It's like to take all that and then sample it and then create a piece about it. It's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? It was. They still got it somewhere. I think I've got a copy of it. I can't remember now, but it was so funny. So. And he goes, no, I'm serious. I'm actually going to leave this in the subdued, but I'm going to leave it in the... And I can't now remember whether they actually did keep it in this piece or not. But then I played tabla over top of it, and it was hilarious. So that's one, probably one of the fondest. So there was one night, this is another one of these fond memories. We either started a double session or we were on the back end of a triple session, and it was like 1 or 2 in the morning. It was really late, and we were just fried out of our minds. And so, you know, all day long I've been playing these ridiculous, crazy, you know, parts that Bear wrote for Tycho and frame drums and all this different stuff and complicated time signatures and blah, 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 blah. So now we're doing this one thing. We're doing this. Now it's late, and we're working on this one cue. And it was just like a very minimal, this one thing. I think I had a clave part or something, and it was very minimal. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, you just click, and then you kind of wait a bunch of bars, and then click, and you know, whatever. And it must have taken us 5 minutes to get this piece because I kept falling asleep while I was counting bars. And Brandon, but he didn't see it at first. So, like, I go, okay, start. So I'm counting bars, and I'm literally, like, I'm just kind of standing there, and, like, my eyes are just, like, closing. And then I go, like, I think I'm supposed to play soon. And then they go, like, Ambie, you just missed it. And I go, oh, okay, let's do it again. So I get that one, but then I got, like, 4 bars to count to the next clave hit or something. Mm-hmm. And I just faded again, you know. And to this day, I mean, that we got laughing so hard that, I mean, we couldn't continue for a while because we were just out of our minds with the laughter. Just because it was like, Brandon goes, I can't believe this, man. He's like, man, you've been playing this ridiculous music all day, and now you can't even play a quarter note. He's like, what's going on? But, I mean, he knew what was happening, so it was just hilarious.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much for your time today. And
Well, I appreciate that, man, and thank you.